This is Herb Montgomery with Renewed Heart Ministries, and I want to welcome you to this week's weekly podcast. This week, our feature text is Matthew 20, 13 through 16, where it says, "But he answered one of them, 'I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired last the same as I give you. Don't I have the right to do what I want to do with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous?' So the last will be first, and the first will be last." That's Matthew 20, 13 through 16. The title this week is "The Last Shall Be the Same as the First, and the First the Same as the Last." And first, I just want to say, man, it is good to be back. At the end of last month, I found myself needing just to take a break for a while for a little self-care. But I had just completed giving 27 presentations to three separate audiences within the same 9 days. And I just want to appreciate the patience of each of you over the last couple weeks as I've been kind of MIA, and know that I've missed you. And I want to just dive right in to this week. I want to begin by asking you to experiment with me. And let's not, for the sake of just for experimentation, just for a bit, let's not spiritualize everything Jesus said about money and economics. Not spiritualizing Jesus' teaching on money, especially on money, enables us to gain, I think, a deep insight into Jesus' new alternative society that we're just simply prevented from seeing when we spiritualize everything. I also want to define the word right from the beginning. I want to define the word denounce. To denounce, according to New Oxford American Dictionary, it means to publicly declare to be wrong or evil. The Oxford American Writer's Thesaurus offers these words as synonyms of denounce: to condemn, to criticize, to attack, censure, decry, revile, vilify, discreet, damn, reject, proscribe, malign, rail against, lay into, formally castigate, expose, betray, inform on, incriminate, implicate, cite, name, and accuse. Wikipedia says it's a public accusation or a reporting. Whichever of these descriptive words you use, together they give us a kind of flavor of what it means to denounce something. And in Matthew 11, 20, Matthew's version of the Jesus story tells us that Jesus began to denounce the towns in which most of his miracles had been performed. Now, what did this look like? What form did Jesus' denouncements take? And they come to us in the same form, and this is what I want you to notice. It's the same form of the denouncements of the Old Testament prophets. They come in the pronouncement of a woe. In the very next verse, Matthew 11, 21, it says, we find, and this is his denouncement to those towns in verse 20, "Woe to you, Chorazin! Woe to you, Bethsaida!" Erdman's dictionary states that in the New Testament, woe functions as a prophetic denunciation. And Jesus is standing in his prophetic lineage and his use of the language here. But what I want you to contemplate this week is not the denunciation of these two towns, but rather another denouncement that Jesus made in Luke's Jesus story in Luke chapter 6. This is Luke 6, 24 through 26. Jesus says, "But woe to you who are rich, for you have already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who weep now," as opposed to mourn for the present social order, "for you will mourn and weep. Woe to you when everyone speaks well of you, for that is how their ancestors treated the false prophets." And let's back up and look at the big picture. Jesus had just pronounced a blessing, which is the opposite of an announcement. He had just pronounced a blessing on the opposite group. And remember, Jesus is not saying that there's something righteous in being poor. He's saying that those for whom the present social order has left them poor, has left them hungry, has left them mourning, the changes that Jesus had come to make were going to be especially in their favor. The alternative human society that Jesus was inviting all to join would be a blessing for those who were poor under the present system. And at bare minimum, it would be problematic for those who were benefiting by the present system. But we'll talk about that in a moment. Let's look at the two groups first. Luke 6, 20 through 22 says, "Looking at his disciples, he said, 'Blessed are you who are poor, for yours is the kingdom of God. Blessed are you who are hungry now. And remember, that's as a result of the present system. For you will be satisfied. The changes Jesus had come to make would make things different for them. Blessed are you who weep now, for you will laugh. In Luke 6:24-25, it says, "But woe to you who are rich, for you've already received your comfort. Woe to you who are well fed now, for you will go hungry. Woe to you who laugh now, for you will mourn and weep." And remember, this is laughter or rejoicing as a result of the present system, which creates opulence for some and poverty for others. And Jesus is doing two things. First, he's proclaiming that this new social order that he was teaching was good news for those who are presently in a position of being last. And again, it was at least problematic for those who were presently first, presently benefiting by the present system. And second, he's indicting the rich, and there's no way around it. To understand the logic of this, remember, the earth is not an infinite resource. It provides, according to Gandhi, Gandhi's famous for this statement, enough for every person's need, but not every person's greed. And I understand the opulence for everyone argument. We want everybody to be in plenty. But the resources of this earth just simply don't work that way. If someone is hoarding more than they need, someone is going without what they need. And think of the story of the Hebrew manna story. What's the story truth there? Everybody had what they needed because those who gathered much shared with those who gathered little. And to say that this was an alternate society seeking for equal distribution of earth's resources. And that is to say that Jesus's alternate society that he was seeking to establish was seeking for the equal distribution of earth's resources so that each person could have what they needed, and that was good news, and it was a blessing to the poor. In Luke 4:18, it says, the Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. And what does that mean? Well, at minimum, it means that if our Jesus is not first and foremost systemic good news for the poor, those who the present system leaves in poverty, we have to at least wonder if our Jesus is the same Jesus in the story. Jesus' new economic teaching also had something to say about debts, and they were debts that had been incurred under the present system. Jesus was clear, all debts are to be canceled. And this too was good news to debtors. It was at least problematic for creditors. Remember, Jesus' goal again is equality, not just in opportunity, and we'll talk about that in a moment as well, but in result. What Jesus is announcing is what was never practiced by the Hebrews, but the Hebrew tradition nonetheless, of Jubilee, where all debts became forgiven. This is Matthew 6:12, and forgive our debts as we also have forgiven our debtors. This was hard news for those economically benefiting from the present system. If the liberation of Israel was to take place, it was going to have economic implications to be forgiven of Israel's debts an oppression environment where they're being oppressed by, in other words, liberation from Roman domination. It was going to involve them literally forgiving those who were indebted to them. And again, this was hard news for those economically benefiting by the present system of that day of credit and indentured servitude. At Luke 18:25, Jesus says it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who's rich to enter the kingdom of God. And the idea that there was a gate that a camel had to get down on their knees to enter into, called a needle, that made it difficult to enter but not impossible, that whole idea has long been debunked by scholars. That's a made-up story. What Jesus is saying is that it's impossible for the rich to enter Jesus' new alternative society here on earth, because fundamentally, what's fundamental to this new society at its core is a sharing of one's superfluous wealth with those that have less. At its core, Jesus' new alternate society is a divestment of riches for some and a redistribution of those resources with the aim of equality. And notice how it played out in the Corinth church. In 2 Corinthians 8:13-14, Paul writes, "Our desire is not that others might be relieved while you are hard-pressed, but that there might be equality. At the present time, your plenty will supply what they need, so that in turn their plenty will supply what you need. The goal is equality." Again, that's 2 Corinthians 8:13-14. And the reason the rich Jesus is saying with this camel idea, camel and the needle. The reason the rich can enter into the kingdom as well as the camel can go through the eye of a needle, taken literally, is because it's not an imposed reason, it's an intrinsic one. The first step for the rich in following Jesus is a divestment of their riches. It's the making of the rich unrich. To enter into Jesus' kingdom is to give up your wealth, your riches. It's alleviating the poverty of the poor through sharing those riches, not as some claim of making all people poor, but again with the goal of equality. It brings others, some up, it brings others down, the last and the first become equal. And Jesus taught the rich in Matthew 19:21, go sell your possessions and give to the poor, and you'll have treasure in heaven, then come follow me. And this was not an isolated occurrence that was only privately applied to this specific person. This was a staple teaching of Jesus's words, which were to all who were rich. In Luke 12, 31-34, it says, but seek his kingdom, and these things will be given to you as well. Do not be afraid, little flock. Notice this is his teaching in general of his alternate society. For your Father has been pleased to give you the kingdom. And this is what he tells this group. Sell your possessions and give to the poor. Provide purses for yourselves that will not wear out, a treasure in heaven that will never fail, where no thief comes near, no moth destroys, for where your treasure is, there your heart will be also. This is exactly why the first expression of following Jesus in the book of Acts, it was manifested in Jesus' followers selling their properties and giving to anyone who was in need. Those who accepted, it says, those who accepted his message were baptized. About 3,000 were added to their number in that day. They devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship, to breaking of bread and to prayer. Everyone was filled with awe at the many wonders and signs performed by the apostles, and all the believers, all of them, were together and had everything in common. They, that means all the believers, sold property and possessions to give to anyone who had need. And when this wealthy young man heard that this is what Jesus was attempting to do, it was too much. In Matthew 19, if we go back to that story, 22-23, it says, when the young man heard this is the sell everything you have and give it to the poor, he went away sad because he had great wealth. Then Jesus said to his disciples, truly I tell you, it is hard for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. And remember, this is Jesus' new alternative society here and now. And I want to juxtaposition this statement by Jesus that it's hard for those with wealth to enter Jesus' alternative, beautiful community with the statement of Jesus in Matthew's Jesus just 8 chapters earlier. Matthew 11:28-30, it says, come unto me, all you who are weary and burdened, and I'll give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I'm gentle and humble in heart, and you will find rest for your souls. For my yoke is easy, it says, and my burden is light. Now, what's up with that? It sounds like there's a contradiction. Well, what can't be missed is that Jesus is saying if the present system has caused you not to be at ease surrounded by riches, but weary and heavy laden in need of rest, if you are worn out as a result of the way the present system functions, you're going to find Jesus' alternative society easy. It was a blessing, remember. But if you were one of the ones presently benefiting by the current system, Jesus unmistakably states that you're going to have a harder time embracing Jesus' teachings on economics. Entering into this alternative society that is centered in Jesus' teachings would be, according to Matthew 19:26, impossible on our own and only possible with God's help. Again, why was it so hard? What was it about it that made it so difficult? Jesus is not selling the American definition of equality, which is just simply an equality in the matters of opportunity. Everybody has the same opportunity as they compete with one another. Jesus is calling for a system that creates equality, not just in the opportunity, but in what the end result is as well. And this is the point of the Jesus story that's told of the workers who arrived at the end of the day, and yet they were all paid the same. Those who arrived late were paid the same as those who had been there all day long. In Matthew 20:13-16, again, it says, but he answered one of them, I'm not being unfair to you, friend. Didn't you agree to work for a denarius? Take your pay and go. I want to give the one who was hired the same as I gave you. Don't I have the right to do what I want with my own money? Or are you envious because I am generous? So the last will be first, and the first will be last. And again, this was good news to those that were last. it was at least problematic for those who were first. And Gandhi is one of the many in history who have experimented with this. There are two books that Gandhi states had the biggest effect on his life and his thinking than any other of the books that he'd read. The first was Leo Tolstoy's book, The Kingdom of God is Within You, and the second one, which he cannot speak highly enough of, was John Ruskin's book, Unto the Last. Gandhi, in his autobiography, he stated that the second book, this Ruskin's book, the Unto the Last, crystallized for him three truths. And in the words of Gandhi himself, I'm going to quote for you Gandhi here, it says that the good of the individual is contained in the good of all. Number two, that a lawyer's work has the same value as the barber's, inasmuch as all have the same right of earning their livelihood from their work. And number three, that a life of labor, the life of the tiller of the soil and the handicraftsman, is the life worth living. Gandhi embarked from reading Ruskin's book, the Unto the Last, also for John Ruskin, it was taken from our featured text this week. I desire to give unto the last the same as to the first. Gandhi embarked on an experiment after reading this book that he called the Phoenix Project. And it was where everyone was paid the same amount regardless of the job that they did. And the sense of community and mission that this produced, I think, is breathtaking. It takes one time to read all about it, but if you do, you'll find that everyone worked for the mission, and they looked at each other as equals. And we all know how Hasbro's Monopoly game ends. I think that Gehenna, in the Old Testament prophetic sense, may be unavoidable. Jesus is offering a way to life, an alternative, beautiful community. And there are two narratives that we can live by. Number one, the narrative of scarcity, anxiety, competition, or competitive accumulation, rather, stockpiling, hoarding, and violence. Or we can live according to the narrative of abundance and confidence and cooperative sharing, generosity, and peace. Narrative one is to believe that there's not enough to go around for everyone's needs. It's a narrative of scarcity, and that's to allow anxiety to take over our lives, to drive us to a life of accumulating stockpiles that we then have to protect with violence from those who don't have as much as we do. And the other is that there's actually enough for everyone's needs to be met. That's this idea that there's an abundance. There's not enough for everyone's greed, but there's enough for everyone's need. And if we share and cooperate, we subscribe to a narrative of confidence rather than anxiety, of generosity rather than hoarding and stockpiling. And rather than having stockpiles that you need to protect through violence, a shared mutuality of generosity, it produces peace. And the least we can do, whether we understand how to get from where we're at today to Jesus, where Jesus is at, where he's calling us to, the least we can do is begin to be honest about our narratives, which narrative we're living according to. I want to close this week with the words of Leo Tolstoy. This is from his book, the one we just mentioned, The Kingdom of God is Within You. It says, "I do not say that if you're a landowner, you are bound to give up your lands immediately to the poor. If a capitalist or a manufacturer, your money to your workpeople. Or if that you're a czar, minister, official, judge, or general, you are bound to renounce immediately the advantages of your position. Or if a soldier, on whom all the system of violence is based, to refuse immediately to obey in spite of all the dangers of insubordination. If you do so, you will be doing the best thing possible, but it may happen, and it is most likely, that you will not have the strength to do so. You have relations, a family, subordinates, superiors. You're under an influence so powerful that you cannot shake it off. But you can always recognize the truth and refuse to tell a lie about it. You need not declare that you are remaining a landowner, manufacturer, merchant, artist, or writer because it is useful to mankind. You need not declare that you are remaining a landowner, manufacturer, merchant, artist, or writer because it is useful to mankind. You need not declare that you are a governor, protector, czar for the public good, but because it is agreeable to you, because you are used to it. You need not declare that you continue to be a soldier because you consider the army necessary to society, but rather for fear of punishment. You can always avoid lying in this way to yourself and to others, and you ought to do so, because the one aim of your life ought to be to purify yourself from falsehood and to confess the truth. And you need only do that, and your situation will change directly of itself. There is one thing and one thing only in which it is granted for you to be free in life. All else is beyond your power. That is to recognize and to profess the truth. It's interesting that you can see from this, this is how the book closes, basically. You can see how these final thoughts being left in the heart of Gandhi as he was reading them, why he chose to entitle his autobiography as his Experiments with Truth. Heart group application this week. This week for our heart group application, I want to recommend to you that same book, The Kingdom of God is Within You by Leo Tolstoy. You can download a free copy of it free of charge at Amazon.com or at other places on the internet if you just Google it. You can pay for a copy too if you'd like to buy an actual hard copy, but you can read it online in many places for free. But number one, what I want you to do is just dedicate some time each day to just reading and contemplating what you're reading. You're not going to agree with everything. I didn't agree with everything, but there's enough in there that you will find, I think, of benefit and value. Number two, journal your thoughts, your feelings, your questions, your insights. And then number three, spend some time in your heart group this upcoming week discussing what you're reading. In other words, just process some of what you're reading out loud with others. Jesus' teachings were never meant to be understood or applied in isolation. They were to be navigated with one another. And together we can make a difference. Together we can learn to recognize and participate in Jesus's alternate society, the beautiful and beloved community centered around Jesus's shared table. It's a beautiful community. And this week we'll end with Gandhi's words, "Poverty is the worst form of violence." That's from Mahatma Gandhi. And his statement that we began with, "The earth provides enough to satisfy every man's need, but not every man's greed." This week, keep living in love till the only world that remains is a world where love reigns. I love each of you. I'll see you next week.